going on Tes Zayin Omud Aleph, five lines from the bottom.
Tes Zayin Omud Aleph?
Five lines from the bottom, yeah. The two letters. Okay, we discussed yesterday, we mentioned that we have a Mishnah at the end of Chulin, and actually it's going to be the next Mishnah in almost after in our Perek as well, that says that you have the case of Shiluach HaKam, where we know the Torah tells us you're not allowed to take the mother bird, you're not allowed to take the eggs or the chicks without sending away the mother bird first. And then you have a mitzvah that says, Shaleach HaShalach HaSe'en, you should send her away. So what happens if you took
the first you take?
So that's the question. What happens if you took the chicks without sending away the mother bird? Rabbi Yehuda says that then you get malchus, and the Chachamim say you don't because you have the esser over there to send away the mother.
Normally you're supposed to do what? First,
supposed to send the mother away. In this case, you didn't. So Rabbi Yehuda says in that case, once you failed to send her away, you get malchus, and the Chachamim say no. Mishaleach ve'neloika, you send away the mother, you don't get malchus. So we said that the general rule is that if you have a mitzvah loisa say where you have attached to it and I say, then you don't get malchus for it. You do the esser and then you're potter from malchus. So Rabbi Yochanan had said on that that there's only two cases where if you didn't do the mitzvah say, you will get malchus. One of them was Shiluach HaKam, and he said there's another one, but he didn't specify which one. So we were figuring that it is the case of the oines where he made a neder barabim. That he's not going to marry her again. So then he was mevatel, the mitzvah saseh, that would be an example where he'd get malchus. So now the Gemara is going to ask, don't we have three other examples where we have a mitzvah, again, where we have a loiseseh, which is attached to an eseh, a loiseseh, a lava nitekla eseh, where on the face of it, it's possible to mevatel the eseh and then do something to prevent the eseh from happening, and yet we see you don't get malchus. So how does that fit? Why is Rabbi Yochanan saying you only have two examples?
But then you have a mitzvah, exactly.
Yeah.
If you have a lava, then you have an essay.
And then you have an essay, exactly.
But
so that's
it. You could say they're two different mitzvahs.
But it's a lava mitzvah essay. Don't steal, but if you do, then return it. So the question is the two lekka. So are you telling
me? You owe the lava.
You owe the lava. So that's the question. That point is the essay makes up for the lava.
Uh-huh.
So the question is the two lekka. Are you telling me there are no other cases where it's possible to be mevatel the essay and get malchus? Besides for Shiluach HaKam and Oinus, don't you have other examples? Simon Gezel Mishkin Opeya, namely Gezel. You have, first of all, the case of Gezel, the Rachman Amaloy Sivzel, the Heshem Ezekzela. You have the Torah says, don't steal, but if you do, then return the lost object. And you have Ashavas Aveda is not really an example.
Ashavas
Ezekzela, right. And you have Mashkin, the Rachman Amaloy Sivzel, Beisel Lavat Avot, Toshav Toshav Loy Avot, Kavoy Hashemesh. And you have a mashkin, where the Torah tells you that if you took a mashkin from somebody for a loan, then you're not allowed to come into his house to take the mashkin. And second of all, you have a mitzvah that you have to return it to him, every evening. So that's the lava of an esser. So that's the lava of an esser. And either way, with either of those two mitzvahs, you can have where it's possible to fail to be mekayim the mitzvah that day. You didn't return the gzela. You didn't return the mashkin at night, like you're supposed to, and you can also have bitloy, where you actually mevatel it, you destroyed the gzela, or you destroyed the mashkin, and yet on the face of it, you don't get malchus. Why do we say that there are only two cases? Why shouldn't you get malchus in those cases? The answer is hasam kibin dechayev v'tashlumim en loiko mashalim. Yes, but the reason is because since in those cases you chayev to pay for the gezel or for the mashkin, then you don't get malchus as well as pay.
You have to pay anyhow.
Okay, so you have Tosfos discusses over here, and various other Rishonim also discuss that we're not necessarily saying the fact that you can't get a double penalty, especially because the two different things would be for two different actions. The malchus would be for the fact that you stole in the first place, that you did a mitzvah loisa, and that you were over on a lav, and the mishalim would be for the fact that afterwards you destroyed the gezer, that you destroyed the object, or you destroyed the mashkin or whatever. So not necessarily when we say over here that given the chayv v'tashlumin, it's not so much the fact that we're not going to give you a double penalty because they're for two different actions. That's what we're saying. We don't mean that. What we mean is you accomplish the mitzvah saseh by paying back for the mashkin or for the gezel. The same mitzvah, as I say, is accomplished by doing that as well. Therefore, you still don't have bitloy or veloy bitloy. You still don't have, by burning or destroying or whatever, the mashkin or the gezel, you haven't actually been mevatel the mitzvah, as I say. You still have a mitzvah, as I say, a heishiv, to return.
There's no malchus, right?
Therefore, there's no malchus.
How can you say that with one payment, you take away two averis? That's hard.
What do I don't understand?
The first avera is
that you stole. The second one is that you burned the mashkin.
And then you burned the mashkin.
Fine. But nevertheless, the fact is, the Torah tells us, don't steal, but if you did, return it. But return it doesn't necessarily mean returning the object itself. As we learned back in Bava Kamma, there are many cases where you just return the value of it. Same thing with the mashkin. It's not necessarily that you have to return the mashkin itself. It's that you have to return the value of it.
Okay. I mean,
it's preferable to return the actual thing, of course. But if not, then you return the value. But that's the point, in other words. So it's a lava nitik assay, where the assay is not just to return the thing itself, it's to return the value of it. Therefore, that still exists. Therefore, you can't get malchus. Now, it is interesting, though, with that said, that Rambam actually paskins in the case of Gezel or in the case of Mashkin, that in fact, if you burnt or otherwise destroyed the Gezel or the Mashkin, you would in fact get Malchus. And the Mephoshim have a bit of a time understanding how what the Rambam is saying would fit with our Gemara. One idea of it, as we discussed yesterday, that Rambam holds by the opinion, Kimoi Vele Kimoi, that as soon as you fail to fulfill the mitzvah saseh, then you already chayav malchus. Well, over here, you failed to fulfill the mitzvah saseh because you went and destroyed the thing. Therefore, you can already be chayav malchus. We don't even have to say bitloy v'loy bitloy. We can already say kimoy v'loy kimoy because you failed to return it in time, or you failed to return. You were given hasra. If you steal this thing and you don't return it right away, or you take this mashkin and you don't return it every night, you are going to get malchus. And he didn't. He didn't return it that night, or he didn't return it right away.
We're
not talking about Bashogi, we're talking about Mesa.
He'll be over the lap.
That's what the Rambam is saying. He'll get Malchus. Okay, and the truth is, if you say Kimo over like Kimo, yeah, it could even be if he did it Bashogi, maybe, okay. Because the original Gezel, right. Or the original taking of the Mashkin was Mesa. Yeah, maybe. Okay, fine.
Where do we see that? You can
because that's what the Torah is saying. It tells us if you do a certain avera, right. You should be chayav malchus. However, instead, you're going to do this essay, and that will make up for it, and therefore you won't get malchus.
Where do we see that you won't get malchus?
Because that's the implication. That's the implication. Because you fulfill the essay, therefore you're not going to get malchus.
Okay.
Yeah.
If a guy does tshuva, he never gets malchus.
Based in Shalmata can't deal with whether he did tshuva or not, because they can't know what's in his heart. They can't know whether it's a genuine tshuva or not. Yeah. Okay. So therefore, you can't say that Gezel or Mashkin is an example where you could get malchus, because you can't, because you can always do tashlumin. Okay, the mask
before
of data.
So if you don't give tashlumin, then what happens? So
again, according to the Rambam, you could argue, fine, chemo over like chemo, so therefore you get malchus on those grounds. But at least in terms of what Rabbi Yochanan is saying, according to the Girsa that we have in front of us in the Gemara, that Rabbi Yochanan is the one who says bitloy v'lo bitloy, then you're not going to, because there's no way to be mevatel it. Because even if you burn it or whatever, you have a mitzvah to return it. That's still included in the mitzvah. So, how about I can find you an example. Suppose you took a mashkin from a ger, where again you weren't supposed to take it from his house in the first place, and then you have a mitzvah to return it to him.
A lav?
Or you have a lav, you took it from him illegally, or you took it from him and you're not returning it every night, and the ger dies, the ger has no yoshim, so therefore there's nobody to return it to. We'll mess that ger, and the ger dies. We don't say that you get malchus in that case. Why not? Yeah. The answer is hosam gavra bat tashlumin. The difference is the person who took the mashkin is still chayev to pay.
Yeah.
At this point, there isn't anybody to pay to. Shibud of the ger who took kapaka. Fine, the shibud of the ger has gone away because the ger died without any yoshim. But you still have a chiyuv to pay. The fact that you don't have an address to pay to doesn't take away. There's no bitloy in this case.
Yeah.
So
how are you going to pay?
You don't, practically speaking, you don't. You are over a lot, fine. If we consider it Gezel, I'm not sure if we would consider it Gezel like Ger. If we do, then actually you'd have to give it to the Kohenim, as we learned in Bava Kamma. I'm not sure if this would be considered Gezel like Ger or not, but whatever. Either way, the point is, you're not able to return it because of a side issue, because the Ger doesn't have any yorshim. Doesn't mean you didn't still have a chiyuv to pay it, and therefore we still can't say that you're chayav malchus for it, because there's no bitloy v'lo bitloy over here. Mm-hmm.
So why don't you give it to Bezdin?
You can give it to Bezdin if you want, but you're not obligated. You're not obligated. You're not obligated. How about Bo'ika Peah? What about, I can give you another example involving Peah. The Torah says you're not allowed to cut away the corner of your field. You have to leave them over for the poor and the ger. And you're able to find a way that you fail. Again, you have a lava nitzik laster because you have don't cut all the corners of your field. But if you did, leave it for the ani. But we can find a case of chemo v'le chemo. It's possible to be mekayim it and to fail to be mekayim it. Bitlo v'le bitlo. You can find a way to be mevatel it or not to be mevatel it.
Well, there's no one there.
No, that's not. Namely, we learn in a Mishnah like this. Mitzvah peah lahafrish min hakama. The ideal mitzvah peah is that you separate it while the grain is still standing, before you harvested it. But if you didn't do it while the grain was still standing, then you separated instead your grain was already cut. Then you take it from the omrim, from the bundles of grain, and you give some that were cut, and you give some of that to the aniyim. If you didn't separate from the bundles of grain, then you separate from the pile of grain after you made the grain into a stack.
Right.
Adshalei mirach, but that's only before you did miruach. Part of the process. So when you have bundles of grain, afterwards you take them and you thresh them and whatever. And eventually, what you do is you take the clean grain, you take the pile of kernels, and you make it into one big pile. That's called a kri. And then usually the minhag in those days was afterwards you would take a farm tool of some kind and you use it to smooth out the sides of the stack. That's called miruach. And usually miruach is considered that's the gemar malacha of grain. At that point, the grain is the malacha on the grain has been finished. At that point, once you do miruach, once you smooth out the sides of the stack, at that point the grain becomes chayiv and meiser. So ad shalom miruach. So as long as you didn't do miruach, you can still give peah from the pile of grain without having to take meiser from it yet.
Why do you equalize the pile?
I have no idea. I'm not a farmer, but for whatever reason. Okay, so they had some reason. I guess they wanted, this way they could see more clearly how much is in the pile. I have no idea. Whatever it is, the point is, before miruach is potter from meiser, therefore, peah is among the matnas aniyim. Matnas aniyim are potter from meiser. So therefore, as long as you give the peah from the standing grain, or from the bundles of grain, or from the pile of clean grain before you did miruach, you will not have to take ma'aser from it. You can give it to them without taking ma'aser, and then it's potter from ma'aser. However, mirchoi, once you did miruach, now it became chayiv and ma'aser, ma'aser v'noisim. Then you first have to take truma and ma'aser, and only then can you give peah to the ani, because at that point the whole pile became chayiv and ma'aser. Fine. The point is, though, now what happens on the face of it? Now the Mishnah stops at that point, which implies, in other words, so what would happen if even after miruach you did not give peah to the ani? Instead, you took the grain and ground it. It sounds like, according to the Tanna Kamma, at that point it's too late. You can't give peah anymore. Well, there you have bitloy v'le bitloy. There you have a case where it's possible to mevatel the mitzvah by grinding it. At that point, you don't have you're not able to give peah from it anymore. And yet, we're not saying that that's an example where you would get malchus for it. Why not? The answer is kiddush Rabbi Shmuel. The answer is that Rabbi Yochanan may hold like Rabbi Shmuel, dama af mafresh mina isa. Namely, Rabbi Shmuel says that's not the last point at which you can give ma'aser. You could even, not ma'aser, peah. You could even give peah from the dough. So if you ground up the grain into flour and you kneaded it and made dough, you could still give peah from that. You see, you still give peah from the dough.
Therefore, there's no
bitloy v'le bitloy. Therefore, there's no way to be mavatel. That's the question. Fine, according to Rabbi Shmuel, you can still have a case. You ate the dough or the bread, whatever, and therefore you mavatel it. So why wouldn't that be an example where bitloy v'le bitloy? Why wouldn't that be an example where you actually mavatel the mitzvah saseh via dayim, and therefore you should get malchus? And Rabbi Yochanan didn't seem to mention it. So therefore, okay. Ela zoyt v'oid acheres aha. So we have to answer no. When Rabbi Yochanan said before that there's this example of Shiloh HaKan, where you have an example where you're able to be mevatel the mitzvah saseh and get malchus, and another example, and we thought the other example is the case of the Oynes who divorced his wife and then was madir her al das rabbim, that he's not going to remarry her, we thought that was the second case. No, rather the second case that Rabbi Yochanan was referring to is Taka, our case of Peah. because even according to Rabbi Shmuel, it is possible to move off of it by eating the dough, by eating the bread.
So according to
Aval Oynes,
so
why don't we have three cases then?
Yeah, exactly.
Because Aval Oynes Loy, by the case of the Oynes divorcing his wife and then making a neder al das rabim that he's not going to have hanah from her, that does not work.
Right.
Why? Now we said before we thought that it did because once you make a neder al das rabim, there's no afara.
Right.
However, now we realize differently. The heicha amrinan al das rabim ein la afara. When do we say that if you make a neder al das rabim, then there's no being made for it? That is l'dvar harishus. That is if you're talking about you made a neder and now you want it canceled in order to do a dvar harashut, hello, in order to do something optional, something that's not a mitzvah. So a person makes a neder, al das rabim, not to do something, for example, and now he wants to do it, but it's a dvar harashut, then fine, there's no being made for, there's no being matter to the neder. Aval a dvar mitzvah, but if we're talking about that the neder is impinging on a dvar mitzvah, it's preventing him from doing a dvar mitzvah, where in this case, after all, he has a mitzvah to remarry the woman that he was matnis, then look, then we don't say. Then yesh lo hafara, then we say that there is hafara, because the rabbin would agree to be made for it in order to enable him to do the mitzvah. As we have an example, of a teacher of children, he was being pesheya with the children. What does that mean, pesheya? So Rashi says it means that he was hitting them too much. In a different Gemara, actually, Rashi said, in a different Gemara, in Bechoris, Rashi goes even further, that he was hitting them so much that sometimes he was killing them.
Boy, that was all good.
Different other Rishonim talk about, I think the Ritva talks about, I think, that no, Pasha B'Yanuki means he wasn't being careful to pay attention, that they're reading correctly, or he wasn't being careful to make sure that class starts on time, whatever. Adre Rav Acha, so Rav Acha put him under a neder al das rabim that he should never again teach because we don't want such a person teaching students.
Yeah.
However, Ravina restored him. Ravina reinstated him as teacher. Deloy ishtakach the dayak kavasei because they couldn't find anybody else who was a midayak who was as precise in the details of what he taught the children. So I don't know how the Rashi and Bechoris would explain it. Malko is amazing. The fact is most of the students survived, obviously. But according to the Gemara, some didn't, but the majority did. The majority did. And anyway, Rashi over here just says, Malko is amazing. You hit him too much, but not talking about killing them. But anyway, the point is, Ravina felt the fact that he's Madaic outweighs that, because you need to be Madaic with teaching children. So therefore, fine, we'll have to teach him to be a little more patient.
Yeah, he was a good rabbi.
The point is, even though Rav Acha made a neder al das rabim that he should never teach, Ravina was able to cancel such a neder because it was a dvar mitzvah. So there we see it. So by the same logic, therefore, the Oynes who divorced his wife, even he made a neder al das rabim, it can be canceled even though it was al das rabim because otherwise it will prevent him from doing the mitzvah. So therefore, there's no bitloy v'lay bitloy in that case. Therefore, the second example of bitloy v'lay bitloy must be the case of peah that we just talked about, where you didn't give peah from the grain. You ended up making it into dough, into bread, and you ate the bread.
So we still have two,
basically. So we have two, Shalor HaKan and Pei.
Okay.
And Pei.
So he was right.
So that's why Rabbi Yechanan said that there are two. Again, that's only according to Bitloy Vele Bitloy. If we say Kimo Vele Kimo, then you have more examples. Yeah, because anytime you have an Esen, anytime you have a Lava Nitzikla Esen, you fail to do the Esen, then you can get Malkus. Right,
right.
Yeah, so that's what I mentioned. For example, Rambam mentions that, for example, with Gezel and with Mashkin and various other examples, you can get Malkus if, for example, you burnt the Mashkin or whatever. Because the fact is, yeah, you have a mitzvah of Tashlumin. You have a mitzvah of Tashlumin, but the fact is that you prevented it from happening right away.
Okay.
All right. New topic. We said in the Mishnah, other examples of a person who gets malchus is somebody who eats nevela or trefa or shkotim or ramasim. So now we're going to talk a little bit about the shkotim or ramasim business. Shkotim or ramasim basically both mean creepy, crawly creatures, but it includes insects, it includes worms, it includes various kinds of flying insects. It also includes the shmona shrotim, for example, the eight small crawling creatures or whatever. One big difference is between shkotim and ramasim, in particular, the Rambam talks about this difference, is you have small creatures like that that are part of the Rav Mizachar in the Keva, that are produced by male and female parents, where they come visibly from a male and a female parent, and then you have various kinds of insects and whatever that don't. Really, actually, up until a couple hundred years ago, it was well accepted, even by scientists, that you can have creatures that are spontaneously generated, that come from decaying, that become from decaying meat or from mud or what have you. A couple hundred years ago, scientists did experiments where they found, on the face of it at least, that there's no such thing. It was before Pastor, actually. That's Balanzani, whatever.
Does that go for lice, too?
Because lice, the Gemara mentions, are not part of it all. Okay, so first of all, like this. The fact that scientists did those experiments, it shows, okay, and in the cases that we know about, there's no such thing as spontaneous generation. First of all, it doesn't mean necessarily that there can't be any such case anywhere in the world. Maybe there could be, and scientists just haven't found it yet. The other way of looking at it is maybe we could say, a second way of looking at it is we could say if they come from microscopic eggs, things that are not visible with the naked eye, then as far as, in general, halacha doesn't consider things that are not visible with the naked eye to exist. That's how we're able, I mean, look, for example, you know, I mean, fermentation is caused by bacteria. When you have wine or vinegar or whatever is caused by yeast or bacteria or whatever, and we don't say it's also to drink wine or to drink vinegar or whatever, because they're not visible with the naked eye.
Disgusting.
But right.
I imply that if they were visible, it would be also.
Then it would be also, sure. But what do you mean? Why? Because the Torah tells us you're not allowed to eat shkatzim or amasim. You're not allowed to eat insects or whatever. So if the yeast cells or bacteria or whatever were visible with the naked eye, sure, they'd be also just like anything, just like larger creatures, just as much as worms, for example.
They're not organisms.
If the cells were visible, if the Eidishter had given us stronger eyes that we were able to see microscopic things, then they'd be also.
They couldn't eat anything.
Well, they're okay. Not cells. We're not talking yeast cell. And yeast are actually living creatures, right?
No,
they're more the
yeast
the cells. They're cells, but they're actually living creatures. They reproduce and all. Anyway, So we have three different ways of looking at it. One is to say that just because scientists say spontaneous generation doesn't exist, doesn't mean it can't exist. Maybe such a thing does exist, and they just don't know about it. Two is that that halacha doesn't concern itself with microscopic things. So you could have creatures that come from microscopic eggs or whatnot, but as far as halacha is concerned, they're spontaneously generated. A third possibility you mentioned about lice is there's a footnote in one of the volumes of Michtav Me'Eliyahu, where one of Rabbi Eliyahu Dessler's Talmidim comments that you have certain halachas where the Chachamim knew there's a certain halacha, for example, there's a halacha you're allowed to kill lice on Shabbos because they're considered to be not part of a rabbi. What about modern science says that lice is not part of it, that lice is part of it, rather. They do come from parents. The halacha is still halacha. The reasoning that the Chachamim gave for it that you find in the Gemara and Shabbos may not be valid anymore scientifically, but the halacha is still a halacha because the halacha is independent of the reasoning that the Gemara gave for it. Anyway, those are three major approaches about it. Anyway, the bottom line is one difference between shkatim and ramasim is that shkatim refers to ones that are part of a rava, ones that visibly come from a male and female parent, whereas ramasim is ones that don't, ones that either taka or spontaneously generated, even though science doesn't accept that nowadays, or that they come from microscopic eggs, and therefore as far as halacha.
Types of reproduction, sexual and asexual.
Yes, but when it comes to insects and whatnot, they're all, as far as I know, they're all. You can have parthenogenesis, but they still come from a parent. They still come.
Some female reproduction.
That's parthenogenesis. That's female only, but you still have. There's still a parent there. Anyway, okay.
Yeah.
Fine. Okay, so that's it. Okay, so that's Shkatzim and Ramah.
One or the other.
Fine. Okay.
Scientifically.
Okay. Omer of Yehuda. Hay man de ocho binisa de bei karba. If somebody eats a binisa de bei karba. So what is that? One second. Malkinim le mishum sheret ha sheret ala earth. We give him malchus on the ground that he ate a sheret that crawled on the ground. So what is Vinisa Devaishiva? Not necessarily. Not necessarily. You have shrotim. You have shrotim, for example, that are generated inside fruits or vegetables, even while they're growing. Let's say, hold on, I'll tell you what the Rambam says about that. But let's start. Rashi says we're talking about worms that Rashi says Vinisa means a worm, and Devaishiva means that grows in cabbage. So cabbage worms. Tosfos says, what's the chiddush? Of course, that's like any other worm. Of course, you're chayav for it. So the Rambam accepts the same definition. The Rambam says the chiddush is, we're talking about if it grew in the cabbage while the cabbage was still growing from the ground. If it started developing in the cabbage only after it was picked, then technically it's mutter. But if it started growing while the cabbage was still attached to the ground, then it would be also, and that's the chiddush of the Gemara over here.
But what's the difference? Why?
Because if it's still attached to the ground, it's considered that it was shored at ala aris. It's considered that it crawled on the ground because it crawled on something which is attached to the ground. Anyway, Tosfos doesn't like that explanation. Tosfos says that Benisa means a fish, and Debekarba means it's found in the plowing area. Meaning sometimes you have, in an area of a field that you plowed, you find a fish-like creature over there. It could be, and then you find like the ground is muddy or whatever, so you have like a little fish or whatever that came in from the irrigation canal or whatever and wound up over there in the field. So the chiddush is, even though this is a creature that has fins and scales, it looks like a fish, and if you found it in the water, it would be completely mutter, but because you found it here living on the land, therefore it's also. That's Tosfos' explanation. So now it's sheretz alaret. Okay, so those are the three major explanations.
I mean, you don't find fish in area where there's no water.
So over here, there's enough water for them to live in, but it's basically land.
Mud.
It's mud, whatever.
Mud.
It's mud, yeah. Okay.
Fish don't live in mud.
Okay, but in this case, this one can for a while, but therefore it's not considered a fish anymore.
Right.
To crab,
like
so a crab is a different thing. A crab is not fish.
Now they have these water filters.
Yeah.
The Babish also needed these water filters.
So among the water filters, you have different opinions among the Babish Apostolim, whether you need them or not. As I understand it, the issue comes down to that...
They
made a whole tumult about it years ago. I know about the issue, okay? We don't have enough time to go in too much in depth into it. As I understand it, the issue boils down to, basically, are these creatures something that you can see with the naked eye or not? If you can, then they're also. If not, then they're not.
They definitely can.
Okay, so then I don't know. All right. I think there's also the question whether they develop in the water lahatchila, where technically they're mutter, as we'll eventually learn in the Gemara and Cholin. Okay, anyway. All right. Hahud da'ocha b'nisa d'vei karba. In fact, there was an example of a person who ate one of these b'nisa d'vei karba, v'nagdei Rabbi Yehuda, and Rabbi Yehuda gave him malchus. On the basis of what we just said, that such a thing is an example of sheretz asheretz alar.
Because
of it, that's what we said. According to Rashi and the Rambam, it's a worm, and therefore it's also like any worm. According to Tosfos, it's a fish, but because you didn't find it in the water, because you found it on the land, and it's able to live on the land. And there are, by the way, there are certain kinds of fish that can live on land for a few days. Okay, so then here we're talking about that.
If you don't take a magnifying glass, you can't see it. But if you use a magnifying glass...
No, magnifying glass doesn't matter.
Do you have to use
you don't have to use a magnifying glass. That's the whole point. Again, if you did that...
If you
said that you needed to use a magnifying glass, for example, you would never be able to eat vinegar. You would never be able to use vinegar, because vinegar, by definition, has bacteria in it that cause it to ferment. Not bacteria, whatever, yeast or whatever it is.
It doesn't have anything.
Yeah, it does.
It's filtered. It doesn't have anything.
After they filter it, but before that, it had stuff in it. Okay, anyway. I'm going to buy it. If a person eats a putisa, which is some type of, Rashi says it's a sheretz.
So one second. You're saying the Torah doesn't differentiate between cells and organisms? Is that?
I'm saying that if you have something that's alive. And
what's alive?
Alive, among other things, is that it reproduces. Fine, if you want to say individual.
Cells reproduce.
Okay, well then in that case, they'd be considered alive. But they can only be seen with a microscope, and therefore halacha doesn't concern itself with them. Only something that can be visible with the naked eye does halacha concern itself with.
They go there, they use it. I'm
going to buy it. Ocho putisa loika arba. If you ate a putisa, you'll be chayev for four lavim and you'll get four malchus. What is a putisa? Rashi says it's sheret hamayim, it's a water creature. Now, why do you get four malchus? So Rashi and most of the Rishonim explain because you have four different places where the Torah says lavim on eating such a creature. Once in Vayikra,
you don't see it.
If you see it, gotten you. We're not talking about where you don't see it. In the times of the Gemara, they didn't have microscopes. So when you're talking about eating something, you have to be talking about something
absolutely.
That you can see with the naked eye.
Naked eye,
okay. So Rashi explains, and most of the other Rishonim accept what he's saying, that you have like this. In Parshas Shmini, the Torah tells us not to eat a Sheret HaMayim. In Parshas Re'eh, the Torah repeats that. And then you have two other Isurim that apply more generally to bugs. So therefore you have four lavim. Therefore you have four lavim and four malkus. Nemola lekechomish, if you eat an ant, then you get five malkus. Because Rashi says, first of all, since it's a beria, since it's a complete creature, then you get a malkus even if it's less than a kezias. We'll discuss that point later on in the Gemara. And then you have the two lavim of shrutim in general. And then you have so
is that an ant?
An ant, yes, an amola is an ant. So you have, according to Rashi, you have two lavim that apply generically to shrutim and three lavim that refer to sheret ha'aretz, that refer to land shrutim. So therefore five altogether. Tzira like a sheish, and if you eat a tzira, which is a hornet or a bee, then you would get six malchus. Five that we said so far, and another one because it's sheret ha'oif, because it's a flying insect. Mishum sheret ha'oif, and the sixth one is because of sheret ha'oif. That's Rashi's explanation, and most of the other Rishonim accept that explanation as well. The Rambam has a whole different shit on it. The Rambam holds you don't get more malchus because the Torah repeated a lot. Just because the Torah says in Parshas Shmini, don't eat shrotim, and then in Parshas Re'eh, the Torah repeats again, don't eat shrotim, that's not a reason to get extra malchus.
Yeah, okay.
Rather, the Rambam understands in each of these cases, the putisa, the ant, and the tzira, you have to say the reason why you get extra malchus is because the creature is in more than one classification. So again, you have an issur in the Torah not to eat sheret ha'aretz. You have another issur in the Torah not to eat remes, namely creatures that don't appear to be from a male and female parent. You have another one that you're not allowed to eat flying ones. Another one that you're not allowed to eat water ones. So therefore, putisa fits into four of those categories. A nemola, the Rambam would say, we have to be talking about a flying ant. Fits into five of those categories, and a tzira would fit into six of those categories. So again, therefore you'd have four, five, and six respectively. Pretty much all the other Rishonim disagree with the Rambam on that, and especially the Ravid, for example, says there are no such creatures. You don't really have a creature that's both a sheret ha'mayim and a sheret ha'oif and a sheret ha'aretz and that it grows in Paris and that it reproduces and that doesn't seem to reproduce from male and female, et cetera. You don't have such creatures. So therefore, it can't mean like that, and therefore most of them accept what Rashi says, that it's just a question of how many times does the Torah repeat the lav. The Rambam goes to the Shita, says he says just because the Torah repeats a lav doesn't make for extra malchus.
Each one's over six.
So that's what the Rambam says. You could have six, because you'd have six different categories.
According to the Ravid, only one.
According to the Ravid, according to the Ravid, it doesn't matter how many categories. According to the Ravid, it depends how many times, how many lavim, and how many repeated lavim, not categories, that's the Rambam. According to the Ravid and everybody else, it would be how many lavim, how many times does the Torah repeat the lav not to eat such a thing?
Okay.
Fine. Amar Rav Achoy. So Rav Achoy says, in this connection, since we're talking about eating bugs, which is a disgusting thing, if somebody holds himself back and doesn't go to the bathroom when he needs to, he's over on loisa shaktu. He's over on the Torah says, don't make yourself disgusting. In context, the pasuk is talking about don't make yourself disgusting by eating insects, but it also includes don't make yourself disgusting by holding back when you need to go to the bathroom. There is a major machlokas among the Rishonim. Everybody agrees you don't get malchus for it. You might get makas maudus for it, but not malchus. The question is it we're saying that it is the raisa, but the Torah, but you don't get malchus for it because the word loisa shaktu is called lav shabbat flawless. It's a lav that includes many different details. Or is it that the chalof only did rabbanon and the pasuk we're mentioning, loisa shaktu is only an afmata for it? You have different opinions among the Rishonim on that subject. It does say, by the way, it is brought. Rishonim bring, and eventually it's brought in the Noisa Kalim on Shulchan Aruch, that if you have a really valid reason, for example, the one example they give there is a person giving a shiur who needs to go to the bathroom and he's holding himself back in order not to interrupt it. That's a valid reason. Other than that,
talking about the bugs, you know, you're having an organism has more bugs than he's himself.
That's not bugs. That's bacteria. Again, bacteria are not visible to the naked eye. Therefore, halacha doesn't concern itself with them. Finish. Omra Bibi Barbaya, here's another example. Haiman de Shossi Bakarna de Omna. If somebody drinks out of the container that bloodletters use, so like they have a tube or whatever, that they counted de Omna literally means a horn of a bloodletter. So like they'd use a horn shaped keli to when they let blood, the blood would flow into such a container. Like nowadays, you have the equivalent of it would be one of those glass tubes that they use when they take your blood. So if somebody drinks out of such a container, which is a disgusting thing, it gets dirty. Same thing, same thing, he's over on Baal Shaktu, because he's doing something which objectively is disgusting. The Pri Chodesh, I think it is, talks about that it depends. It has to be something, in order to be over on this, it has to be something which pretty much everybody would consider disgusting. So you yourself say, I'm not disgusted by it, doesn't matter, both will die to you. But if you have something which some people consider disgusting and other people not, that would be fine. Omer Rava Baravuna. Here's another talking more about dinim of eating bugs. Risik Tisha Namalim. If somebody mushed up nine ants,
like crushed them.
Yeah, crushed together nine ants. The Hevi Echad Chai Veishlimin LaKazayis, and then he took one more, which is Chai. Chai actually Rashi says doesn't necessarily mean alive. It means whole.
Yeah.
Actually, Rashi didn't say that, but that's what it is. Tosfos actually says it means that. Tosfos rather says that chai doesn't mean live; it means whole. So that whole one makes up the total amount of a kazayis together with the other nine. Loike vov, then he gets six times malchus. Hey mishum beria, five malchus he gets because the ant is a beria. Again, according to Rashi and most everybody else, because there are five different times where the Torah says not to eat bugs, which includes ants. According to the Rambam, because we're talking about over here, the ant fits into five different classifications. The echad mishum kazayis nevela, and the sixth malchus he gets because he ate a kazayis of nevela. Because by the time he eats the ant, it's dead, and therefore the kazayis of nevela. What?
Less than
the kazayis doesn't count. Well, we'll see later. Reb Shimon holds differently, but yeah.
Wait a minute. If he eats the other ant,
if he
eats not a kazayis,
then he wouldn't be chayav because he ate less than a kazayis. It might be also. It might be also. Chatishir also menatara or nas as a machlokas in Yoma, but he wouldn't be chayv malchus. Yeah. But because over here the tenth ant, which was still whole, made up the finished up the kazayas, therefore he's going to get five malchus for that one whole ant, and together collectively he ate a kazayas, and therefore he gets one more malchus for that. Rava Amar Rabbi Yechanan, after the Shnayim Bahu, Rava says in the name of Rabbi Yechanan, it doesn't even need to be nine other ones and one, it can be two other ants and the one, all together, if they make up a kazayim. Rabbi Yosef Amar Afila Echad Bahu, and Rabbi Yosef says, even if you only have one mashed up ant and one whole ant. Veloy Pligi, and there's no actual machlokas, but Rav Revi Vahab Zutri, it depends whether we're talking about bigger ants or smaller ants. What do you mean starving? If it's pikuach nefesh, it's pikuach nefesh. We're not there, then obviously pikuach nefesh doch kolat terakola. We're talking about if not. Okay, so Tosfos says that. So what's the point of mentioning two versus nine? What's the difference? The point is, let's say Tosfos says, suppose that the whole ant only makes up to a kazayas when it's still intact. If we were to mush it up as well, it would be then the whole thing would be less than a kazayas. So you would think, therefore, maybe it's not considered choshuv enough to make up a kazayis. Nevertheless, it still does. When you have nine mashed up, practically speaking, you're not going to need the full. You're not going to need every single little bit of the tenth one, of the tenth whole one, to make up a kazayis. You're going to have a kazayis even if that one was mashed up. Therefore, there's less of a chiddush in it. But when you have two plus one. Two mashed up ones plus one whole one, and you're going to say altogether it makes a kazayas, you would say yes, but maybe you should consider the third as if it was mashed up as well, and then you'll have less than a kazayas. That's the point that Rava is saying that no. And then we say even if it's one mashed up one and one whole one, then it also works. And practically speaking, I mean, it could be. The Gemara could have just as well said, Tosfos says, it could have just as well said, if you have one, that makes up a kazayas. But practically speaking, you don't have ants that are that big that one single ant by itself is going to make a kazayim. Okay.
He's telling the infantry.
Yeah. Okay. Then the Mishnah continued with other examples that a person eats something and is chayav malchus. Namely, we said ochal tevel if he ate tevel, or maizurishin kolor if he ate maizurishin where tirmas maizur had been taken of it, or hadn't been taken from it, or maizur sheni that hadn't been redeemed, or hektish that hadn't been redeemed. So talking about mice, talking about tevel, omarav, ochol tevel shemaisa ani loike. What happens now? You have produce where you took out truma, you took out maisa rishin, you took out maisa sheni, not maisa sheni. So let's say we're talking about in the third or sixth. We know that in the third and the sixth year of the Shemitah cycle, oh, yeah, instead of maisa sheni, you have maisa ani. So this guy, he did truma, he did maisa rishin, but then he didn't take out maisa ani.
On the third or the sixth.
On the third or the sixth year. So Rav is saying, Loika, he still gets Malkus for eating such tevel. It's still considered tevel until Maisa Oni has been taken out of it. Now, you would think Maisa Oni, there's no Kedusha in it. Unlike even Maisa Sheni, where at least you need to take it to your Shalayim. Maisa Oni, all you have to do is give it to the Oni.
Right.
You would think, therefore, maybe it doesn't have enough Kedusha that the produce should still be considered tevel and you should get Malkus. No, Rav is saying it does.
But that's not the
halacha. That is the halacha. Kaman, who is that like? Ki Haitana. He goes according to the following Tana, the Tanya, Omer Rav Yosi, Yochol lo yehei chayev el al tevel shalehum medical liquor. You would think that you should only be chayev malchus, or mitzvah de shemayim for that matter, for tevel where nothing has been taken out of it. No truma, no maiser, no nothing. Chura mimena truma gdola v'lehum mimena maiser ishin. What if truma gdola had been taken out of it? We call it truma gdola, by the way, as opposed to truma maiser, which is a smaller amount. Anyway, if Truma Gdola had been taken from it, but Maisa Rishon hadn't been taken out, or Maisa Rishon of Lon Maisa Sheni, or you had taken out Maisa Rishon, but you hadn't yet done Maisa Sheni, Vafila Maisa Oni, or even in the third or sixth year, you failed to take out Maisa Oni, which again has no Kedusha to it. Minayin, how do we know that's still considered Tevel, and you could still get Malkus, and maybe Misa B'dei Shemayim? Talmud Loma, therefore, Talmud Loma, therefore the Pasuk says, Lo Sucha Lecha B'Sherecha B'Goyma, therefore the Pasuk says, you're not allowed to eat in your gate, and it mentions Maiser D'Gon Chatsidosh Chavisarecha, your Maiser. So in context, it means Maiser Shein. But what does the word B'Sherecha mean? Ula Halon O'Aymav O'Chol B'Sherecha V'Tabeu. Later on, when the Torah describes Maiser Oni, it mentions, it uses the expression that they, the Aniyim, will eat it in your gates, and they'll be satisfied. So we see the word B'Sherecha refers to Maiser Oni. Malahala Maisa Oni, Afkan Maisa Oni. So just like over there, the word Bisharecha refers to Maisa Oni. So here, when the Torah says Leisucha Lecha Bisharecha, means that Maisa Oni has not been taken out yet. Ba'amarachman Leisucha, and the Torah says you can't eat it. So therefore, we see that Tevel, that it's still considered Tevel, even if only Maisa Sheni has not been ruled. Maisa Oni can be eaten anywhere. Anyway, Maisa Oni has no Kedusha. That's Bisharecha Bisharecha. They eat it in your gate. But nevertheless, it still has to be taken out, otherwise the produce is still tepid.
And if you don't,
then that's what we're saying.
Why
do you
have to say Bisharecha?
That's why.
Because
if it didn't say Bisharecha, we wouldn't know. That's talking about Maaser Ani. That's the point. We use the Bisharecha. Omer Rav Yosef Kitanoi. So Rav Yosef says, actually, there's a Machlokes Tanoim on this point. Namely, we find in connection with Dmai, we find in a Mishnah in Dmai. Now we know what's the deal with Dmai. We know that the Amei Oreb were careful about taking off Truma, because they knew you chayev Miser if you eat Truma and you're not a Kohen. They weren't careful about taking off Miser Rishon, Miser Sheni, Miser Oni, or whatever. So therefore, the Chachamim made a Takana, as we know, that's basically what Dmai is. So the Chachamim made a Takana, that if you buy produce from an Amei Oreb, you have to take out Miser Rishon and Miser Sheni, or Miser Oni. However, here's the thing. Keep in mind, it's only a topic whether you have to take it, because we say roiv amei aoret maaser, and most of the amei aoret do take off the proper maaser. It's only a mute, it's a substantial mute, but nevertheless a mute that don't. So therefore, that's the whole concept.
So they take out truma.
So everybody takes out truma.
But
they don't take the minority of amei aoret who don't take out the rest. So what happens now? Therefore, the thing is like this. With Vadai, with produce that definitely wasn't Maiser, you have to give the Maiser Rishon to the Levi, and you have to give the Maiser Oni to the Aniyim. In the case of Dmai, Hamoitz Mechaver Lavarai, if the Levi or the Oni comes and says, I demand this Maiser Rishon or this Maiser Oni, you can tell them, well, how do you know? This Amei Aretz that I bought it from didn't take those out already and give it to you. Therefore,
another Levi.
Yeah, so different levy, different oni, whatever, right. So therefore, the din is with Dmai, all you have to do is designate that a certain part is Maiser Rishon, and then take out from it Trumas Maiser, and a certain part of it is Maiser Oni. You don't have to give it to the oni, you don't have to give it to the levy or the oni, because I'm Maiser Machaveh Olavaraya. So, Rabbi Eliezer, I'm Ein Sarech Likrus as Hashem on Maiser Oni Shal Dmai. Rabbi Eliezer, therefore, says that you actually don't even need to, you don't even need to designate the Maiser Oni of Dmai. Not only you don't have to give it to the Oni, that everybody agrees to, you don't even have to designate it. evidently then, Rabbi as a whole, that it's not tevel, that once you did my truma and my submission, then it's not tevel anymore. Whereas the Chachamim say you do have to designate that a certain part of it is Maisa Oni, but you don't have to actually separate it out to give it to the Oni, again, because Hamoitzim Mechavel of Arai. So my law, Balkam Mifridi. So doesn't that mean that would be the basic, the underlying Machlokas, the Marsav of Vada Tovli, or Marsav of Vada in a Tovli? Apparently, the Machlokas would be that the Chachamim hold that in the case of Vadai, in the case of non-Dmai, regular produce where you know that Truma and Maisa hadn't been taken out from, if you don't designate the Maisa Oni, then it will still be Tevel. Therefore, even in the case of Dmai, you have to designate it. Umar Sava Vadai in a Tevel, whereas Rabbi Eliezer would hold, even by Vadai, it's not Tevel if you didn't designate Maisa Oni. Therefore, by Dmai, you don't even have to do that.
Chachamim say you do.
Whereas the Chum say you do. So therefore, this that Rav is saying that if you eat Tevel of Maisa Oni, that if you eat Tevel where Maisa Oni hadn't been taken out yet, you get Malkus. Apparently, that's only a coin to the Chum, not a coin to the Rabbi Yezer.
But can he hold up to Maisa Oni to give it to whom he wants, number one? And the Oni comes, he says, I'll give it to Oni, I don't have to give it to you.
So when I'm good, fine, but you have to give it to, in the case of Vada, you have to give it to somebody. A person is actually allowed to keep his Maisa for up to 3 years. A person eventually has to do Bio Maisa. Eventually, before Pesach of the 4th and 7th year, a person has to arrest again. Because in the case of Dmai, if an Oni comes to you and says, I should be getting this Maisa Oni, he would have to prove that the Amaoritz he bought it from did not already take out Maisa Oni. And he can't, and therefore, because especially Roiv Amaoritz mastered him, and therefore you don't have to give it to him. And according to Rabbi Eliezer, you don't even have to designate it, but according to the Chum, you do. Abaya says that can't be the reason for the machlokas. Ihochi, if that's the case, that they're arguing about whether without taking Maisa Oni, if they're arguing whether it's Tevel or not, Ad Mifugi Besfeker, instead of arguing in the case of Suffolk, in the case of Dmai, look at the Guba Vadai. Better let them argue about the case of Vadai, whether you need to designate Maisa Oni or not for it to not be Tevel anymore. The fact that they're only
Vadai meaning
we're Maisa, we know Maisa wasn't taken yet. Yeah, that it wasn't taken.
But it was not taken.
Yes. And yet we see they don't. So apparently even Rabbi Eliezer agrees that you do have to designate it. Just by Dmai, he holds a different reason. Ella dekula alma vada tovla. No, everybody agrees, even Rabbi Eliezer, that if you don't designate Maisa Oni, it will remain tevel. V'hocha v'hocha mifugi. Rather, the machlokas here in the case of Dmai is on the following point. Mar Sovar, Rabbi Eliezer holds, L'nechshidu amar oret ha-maisa oni shol Dmai. We're not choshed. This that we're saying, we said before that we're choshed that the amar oret don't take maisa properly. But what kind of maisa do we suspect that they don't take properly? The kind where it would involve a hassle for them. The kind where it would involve either where they have to give it away to somebody else, or the kind where they have to take it to Yerushalayim. So that would cover my tradition and my Sheni and my son. So Mar Sovala Nechshidu Amei Aretz on Maisa Oni Shel Dmai. The Rabbi Eliezer holds we're not choshed them on Maisa Oni of Dmai, Kivin Demamoinahu, because since it's only Mamoin, there's no Isser Achila in it. Afrushi Mafrish, then they will be Mafrish it because we're not concerned. Rabbi Eliezer says that they're going to steal from the Aniyim. It's one thing, my Rishon, the Amma Oritz is likely to figure, if I take out my Rishon, I also have to take out Trumath Meiser from it, and that I lose because it only goes to the Koyanim, therefore I don't want to bother in the first place. Meiser Sheni, the same thing, I don't want to bother having to schlep it to Yerushalayim or having to redeem it for cash and take the cash to Yerushalayim. Right. Meiser Oni is just a matter of giving it to the Oni. We don't suspect, really, as it says, that the Amma Oritz farmer is going to try and cheat the Oni like that, take away his Meiser Oni. Therefore, presumably, he separates it. Therefore, when it comes to Dmai, fine, you have to worry maybe you didn't take my solution or my Tosheni. You don't have to worry about my Tosheni. But Rabbanan Sabri. Well, that's what Rabbi Eliezer holds. But Rabbanan Sabri, where is the Rabbanan hold, and this is the halacha, given the tircha le milsa, yes, but since it's a tircha for him, to take out the Maisani, loy mafresh, he may not necessarily be mafresh it, and therefore we have to do it. Therefore we have to at least designate it. We taka don't have to give it to the Oni because I'm Moitz Mechavel of Araya, but we have to at least designate it.
And he designates it, and therefore he cannot use it afterwards.
I don't know. The Amma Oretz who sold you the produce may or may not have done it. That's why it's mine.
Right.
So you have to designate Maisa Oni to be on the safe side. Once you designate it, it's no longer tevel.
Okay.
That you don't have to give it to the Oni because the Oni would have to prove that he's entitled to it.
Okay.
But once you designate it.
That's it. Then you're allowed to eat it.
Then you can't eat it?
Yes. Then the whole thing's not tevil anymore. Then you've done the last stage in the process. Now everything is mutter. Now everything is colon.
But the only you have a suffix whether or not you received it or he did it.
You have a suffix whether the Amma took it out or not. Therefore, you have to do it again to be on the safe side. But you don't have to actually take it out. You just have to designate it. The Hagoyis HaGrob brings a different gears over here, not the Trichale, but the Sanyale, which means that according to the Chachamim Faker, the Amma Oretz may figure, if I designate the Smaiso Oni, I do have to give it to the Oni, and I don't want to bother doing that. And on the other hand, I would feel guilty, I would feel bad if I were to designate the Smaiso Oni and then not give it to the Oni. Therefore, I just won't bother in the first place. So therefore, you have to do it. Whereas Rabbi Eliezer disagrees with that.
Right, but once the
point
is coming, you've designated it. You can eat.
Then you can eat it. Yeah.
It doesn't make sense that you can eat what you designated.
I don't understand why not. Because you designated it in order to make that your produce is not tevil anymore. Now, if the oni wants it, hamoyis machavel of a raya. Until we can bring that raya, you're allowed to eat it. It's whole after all. Yeah.
So he has to come and ask for it?
He doesn't have to come and ask for it. You, lachatchila, are allowed to eat it because there's no reason to think that any oni is going to be able to bring that proof. Then we said in the Mishnah, kama yochom enat tevel. We said in the Mishnah, how much tevel does a person have to eat to be chayiv malchus? We said that Reb Shimon said that kol shehu, any amount, and the Chachamim say kezayis. And then Reb Shimon argued to the Chachamim, look, if a person eats one ant, then like we said before, he ate a beria, he's chayiv malchus, even though the ant is less than a kezayis, why shouldn't it be the same thing over here if he eats one grain of wheat? So, Amr Reb Shimon Lakish, machloikas b'chita, the machloikas between Reb Shimon and the Chachamim is if he ate one grain of wheat, which Reb Shimon argues that a grain of wheat is considered a beria, and the Chachamim do not. Aval b'kemach, but if he had ground up the wheat and made it into flour, and now he eats some of that flour when it's tevel, divrei hakol kezayis, then everybody would agree, even Reb Shimon, it's not a berry anymore, therefore he has to eat kezayis to be chayiv. Reb Yumia omer Reb Shimon Lakish, whereas Reb Yumia says also in the name of Rish Lakish, no, k'machloikas b'zu, kach machloikas b'zu. The machloikas between Reb Shimon and the Chachamim is in both cases, whether it's still a grain of wheat, whether it's been ground up into flour, either way Reb Shimon will say kol shehu and the Chachamim will say kezayin. So, let's consider, Tanan, our Mishnah says, omer lahem Reb Shimon, i'at ha'moidim li ba'ochel namala kol shehu shehu chayiv. So Reb Shimon had said to the Chachamim, don't you agree to me that if a person eats one single ant, no matter what size it is, that he's chayiv malchus, so why should it be any different with wheat? Omer lahem b'nei she'kibir yasa, and they answered him because an ant is a barrier, it's in its original complete form. Omer lahem afchita achas kibir yasa, and Reb Shimon answers to them, okay, one grain of wheat is also a barrier. Implying chita ein kemachloi, that implies only wheat, not flour. So that works according to the Bibi's. That works according to the Bibi's version of the machloi, because it doesn't seem to work according to the Yumi's version. The answer is Reb Yumi would understand the divreim kamalahu. When Reb Shimon makes that distinction, when he mentions a grain of wheat, he's saying according to your own logic, chacham. He's saying, as far as I'm concerned, I would hold a person as chayav malchus for eating tevel or any other iser, even if it was flour, even if it wasn't in its original form. Elo l'didchu, but according to you, Chachamim, who say there's a question of barrier or not, shouldn't you at least agree with me that one grain of wheat is a barrier, and therefore you should be chayav malchus for that? So he himself would say that the same thing would apply even if it was not a grain of wheat anymore, even if it was ground up and made into flour or bread or whatever. But he's saying to the Chachamim, why are you saying only an ant is a barrier and a grain of wheat is not? Shouldn't they both be a barrier? V'rabbanan, so what would the Rabbanan answer to that? They would answer, Briyas Neshama Chashuva. They would answer, only a barrier that's a living creature, an ant, only that is considered a barrier, Chita Loi Chashuva, whereas a grain of wheat is not.
Considered
a barrier. So in Shulchan Aruch, actually, it brings that there are actually three criteria, and this is based on the Rishonim, as the Ritva says, on our Gemara, the Rashba, says there are three criteria that a thing needs in order to be considered a barrier. And it's relevant not just as far as the question of Malchus, it's relevant in Hilchos Tarubas, because there's a concept that a barrier is not bottled. That if you have a barrier which is also and gets mixed up, well, it's not necessarily living anymore, but whatever, that gets mixed up with other similar items, it's not bottled. Okay, you have poskim who want to say maybe it's bottle one of 1,000, but whatever. The point is, it's not bottle in smaller quantity. So there are three criteria that something needs in order to be a barrier. It has to be it was a living creature, as we just said. It has to be that it was osur to begin with, not that it's something that became osur later on. For example, an animal that became a nevela would not be a barrier. And number three, And number three, Tosfos talks about over here about the third criteria, that it has to be that it loses its identity if it gets divided up.
What do you mean it loses?
In other words, let's say for example, nevela or chelev or whatever. Those things, or nevela actually is a good example because it's the second criterion. Chelev, let's say chelev is also like a chelev. But if you have a large amount of chelev or a small amount of chelev, you divide it into smaller portions, each one still has the name of chelev.
Right.
As opposed to, for example, an ant, you break it up, it's not an ant anymore.
No.
So therefore, so the definition of barrier would be that if you break it up, if you cut it up, it loses its identity.
It was a living thing.
No. It doesn't have to be that it loses its identity. It was living, so it has to be something that was living at one point,
yes,
like an ant, that was also to begin with, like an ant, and that if you cut it up, it loses its identity, like an ant.
It exists only when told.
Okay, so that's the definition of barrier then. A barrier. So a barrier, in order for something
to that arises, it loses its identity when it's cut in pieces.
But it wasn't a living thing, so it doesn't fit the first criterion. So therefore, it's not a barrier. Tanya Kavasei de Rabbi Yirmiyah, we learn a braisa in accordance with Rabbi Yirmiyah's understanding of the machlokes. Rabbi Shimon am a kosher lamakos. Rabbi Shimon says when it comes to malchus, any amount you eat, you can be chayev. You don't need a kazayas. Loyom or kazayas el inin korban. When do we say that when do we say that it has to be a kazayas? That's relevant as far as whether you have to win korban chatas if you did it for shogim. This that we said is a halacha l'moshe mitzinai. That there's a halacha l'moshe mitzinai. That you have a concept of kezayis when it comes to isurim. Reb Shimon says that halacha l'moshe mitzinai is only applying in the case where you did it b'shoigin, or you chayev a chatas on it. So Reb Shimon will say when it comes to eating tevel, let's say for example, where we're saying that if a person does it b'mezid he gets malchus. If he were to do it b'shoigin, he would be chayev a korban. Actually, tevel is not really a good example. You don't bring a korban. I don't think tevel is one of the things you bring a chatas for. Let's say chelev, for example. Let's say chelev, you do. So if you ate chelev b'shoigig, you would have to eat a kazayis to be chayim. But if you eat it b'mezid, then even if you ate less than a kazayis, you would be chayim. What's the logic? Why should there be a difference between b'shoigig and b'mezid? So the ritva brings from the Ramah a reason based on a concept in halacha called achshavei. You have a concept that achshavei means he considered it important. Meaning like this, usually we say, why is it that you only chayev for eating a kazayas? Because only a kazayas is considered a significant amount of food. But if you are deliberately eating this chelev or this ant or what have you, even though it's less than that, you are saying, I consider this to be important. I consider this to be important enough that I'm deliberately going and eating it knowing that it's also. Now, you have a concept like that. You have a concept of achshavei that comes up in other areas of halacha. You have, for example, it comes up in connection with chametz. You have, for example, that if you have chametz, you burn your chametz before Pesach. Technically, as long as the chametz was burnt before Pesach, you're allowed to use the resulting charcoal. You're allowed to use it to make a fire on Pesach or whatever. However, the Rosh says you're not allowed to eat it. It's not something that's capable of being eaten anymore. It's not roi l'achila v'chelev. But the fact that you are trying to eat it means achshavei. You're saying, I consider this to be important enough to eat, and therefore it would be osur. It comes up in connection with other things, with chametz as well, for example. It comes up where you have, every year they give out these lists of cosmetics and things that are osur on Pesach because they contain chametz in them, and everybody always wonders, you know, what do you mean it's not roi l'achila v'chelev? One of the answers is because achshavei, the very fact that you're trying to use the shampoo or the soap or this cleanser or whatever, demonstrates that you consider it to be something important, something significant in your life. And therefore that, even if it's not roi l'achila v'chelev, therefore it still contains tarovas chametz, therefore it should be also.
I mean, because you like it or you need it?
Because you're using it. Because you're showing that I consider it important to use it on my hair or to use it or to use it for whatever.
No, don't take off. Peter, off.
What?
Yeah, no, mentions no.
Most if it's bottled before Pesach, it can be bottled during Pesach. Nah, but that's a difference. That's a difference.
It has a chashivas to you.
It has a chashivas to you, therefore it becomes osur, basically. So in a similar vein, if it has chametz, if it doesn't have any chametz, it's not talk about it, obviously. We're talking about if it has chametz. So it's the same idea over here. Again, this person is eating this piece of chalav less than a kazayis. Achshavei, he's considering it important enough to eat. And therefore, he could be chayav malchus for that. As opposed to if he does it for shogeg, he says, no, achshavei, he didn't mean to do it. Therefore, you need a kazayis. Anyway, that's Rabbi Shimon's svara. The halacha is not like that. The halacha is even b'mezid, you need a kazayis in order to be chayav malchus. Nevertheless, the concept of achshavei is a valid one in halacha, though. Just not in connection with malchus. Mishnah continues. More examples of a person eat things and is chayav malchus. Ha'oichel bikurim ad shalei kara aleihem. Number one, somebody eats bikurim before he read the psukim on them. So when you bring bikurim to the mishnah, there's the Torah tells you you're supposed to make the declaration adami oved avi, etc. And those psukim, if you didn't do it, you would get malchus. We'll see in the Gemara. It's not so simple. Kodshei kodshim chutz l'kloyim. Another example would be if you ate kodshei kodshim outside the courtyard of the Beis Mikdash, or kodshim kalim or ma'aser sheni chutz l'chaim, or you ate kodshim kalim like a shlomim or whatever or ma'aser sheni outside the wall of Yerushalayim. Another example, ashover at the etzim of Pesach atar. Another example, somebody breaks a bone from a korban Pesach that was tar, and the Torah tells us that you know how to break bones in it. The etzim lo tishbruvot. Hareza loika aboyim, then in all those cases he gets malchus. Breaks a bone.
Any bone
of the Korban Pesach, yeah. The Pnei Yeshua, by the way, asks. I mean, that it says the Seder in the Torah, you know, to break the bone. Right. What's the Chiddush of it? Why does the Mishnah need to mention it? He says, because the Chiddush is, you would think maybe the Torah only asks is breaking a bone if you're doing it for no special purpose. What if you're breaking the bone in order to eat the marrow in it,
right,
which you would think maybe you're trying to fulfill the mitzvah of eating the Korban Pesach in the best possible way? Still not. Still malchus, yeah. But if somebody leaves over from a Korban Pesach that was tahor, which we discussed yesterday, then that's you don't get malchus for it because you don't get malchus for it either because we said it's a lava nitek la'aseh because you have an eseh afterwards to burn it, or because you we had a couple of reasons. One is because the lava nitek la'aseh. Another is because we said it's a lav shein me'maaseh, you're not doing an action. And another one maybe is because it was Hasra'at Safek, because you can't be sure at the time is it going to be over on it or not. Although we said Hasra'at Safek is a valid Hasra'at. So we have the other two reasons, that it's a lot of mythic lesson and it's a lot of shame in Meister. So you don't get malchus for that, for leaving over from a Korban Pesach of its Tahr. Vashover b'tomei, or if the Korban Pesach became tomei, where even though you're allowed to eat it, it not became tomei, if the Korban Pesach was brought to Tumah, rather. We're talking, we learned back in Pesachim, that the Korban Pesach can be brought, even if most of the kohol is tomei, you still bring the Korban Pesach and it's time. So if you break a bone from such a Korban Pesach, ain't a loika aboyim, you don't get malchus for that. Because when the pasuk says that you shouldn't break a bone, it says the expression, ve'etzem loisish b'ru voy, you shouldn't break a bone in it. And in it is a mirk, meaning only a Korban Pesach that was Torah, not one that was Torah. Another example, hanotel emal abonim, this we learned before, somebody takes the mother bird together with the chicks and doesn't send away the mother bird like he's supposed to, shaloh hakan. Rabbi Yehuda I'm a loyka v'enim shaleach. Rabbi Yehuda says he gets malchus, he doesn't send away the mother bird, because he holds that the mitzvah shaleach, the shalach ha'ta'im, is meant to apply before you took anything. Once you took it, it's too late. Therefore, it's not a lot of mitzvah, I say. The Chum say you send away the mother bird, you don't get malchus, because they hold the shaleach, the shalach ha'ta'im, is talking about after you were over the Aveda, make up for it by sending away the mother bird now. It's a lot of mitzvah class A. Zachwal, the general rule, call mitzvah slois to say sheesh b'kum asay, any mitzvah slois to say where you have a following mitzvah asay, ain't chayov an aler, then you're not chayov malchus for it. And that was Rabbi Yochanan's rule we said before, that there's only two cases we said where it's possible to be mevatel the mitzvah asay and get malchus. So the Gemara says, Shabbat HaKan and Peah. We said, oh, it's not. This that we're saying in the Mishnah, that if you eat Bikurim before you said the Psukim, that is according to Rabbi Akiva, who is Stimasar, who is often mentioned. Rebbe would often put Rabbi Akiva's opinion in the Mishnah as a Stam Mishnah. That's why he's called Rabbi Akiva Stimasar, Rabbi Akiva, who is often a Stam Mishnah. Rashi elsewhere, Megillah gives a different explanation of Rav Akiva Stimasa. We learned in Sanhedrin that we have Stam Mishneh as Rav Meir, Stam Sifra as Rav Yehuda, etc. Stam Tisefter as Rav Yehuda, whatever it is, and all of them are Talmidim of Rav Akiva. So all of them follow the Shitta of Rav Akiva. So therefore, Rav Akiva is called Rav Akiva Stimasa, Rav Akiva who, thanks to him, we have Stam Mishneh and Stam Brises and Stam Tisefters and Stam Sifra and so forth. Anyway, this opinion about the Bikurim is only a coincidence of Rav Akiva. But the Chachamim disagree. They say, no, Bikurim ha-nocha ma'akevistahen, kriya ein ma'akevistahen. No, by the Bikurim, what's ma'akev, what makes it that you're not allowed to eat them yet, is placing them in front of the Mizbeach. But not the Psukim. So you don't need to read the Psukim in order to be able to eat the Bikurim. In order to be able to eat the Bikurim. You do need to have that the Bikurim were placed next to the Mizbeach in order, and only after that is the Kohen allowed to eat them. Rashi says the reason is, by the way, because we have a general rule when it comes to korbanos, or kodshim in general, that only if the Torah repeats something twice does it mean it's ma'akev. If it only says it once, it means you're supposed to do it that way, but if you didn't, you're still yotzei. The hanocha, it says twice. In the psukim over there, it says twice that you need to put it down. Therefore, it's ma'akev. Therefore, we derive it's ma'akev, but the kriya is not. Okay, the Gemara says, "V'leima zudiver of Shimon Stimasa." Why are we attributing that opinion to Rabbi Akiva? Why don't we instead attribute that opinion to Rabbi Shimon and say that it's a Stam Mishneh according to Rabbi Shimon,
right,
which we're going to see in a second that Rabbi Shimon holds that way? The answer is Hakamash
that he holds
like our Mishnah said that the Kriya is Ma'akiv.
Yeah.
The answer is Hakamash Malan. Yes, but that's what Rav Babachanov, that's what Rabbi Yechanan wants to inform us. Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Shimon, seriously, you should know Rabbi Akiva holds in that regard like Rabbi Shimon. My Rabbi Shimon, where do we see Rabbi Shimon talks about this? The Tanya, we have a brayta like this. Now you have a pasuk in Parashat Re'e that says as follows. We quoted part of the pasuk before. We said the pasuk is like Sochal Lecha B'Sharecha. You're not allowed to eat in your gates, which we said before referred to Tevel, to Tevel that Maisa Oni has not been taken from yet. Then it continues. You're not allowed to eat in your gate. Maaser begon chaturosh chavitzaracha, the maaser of your grain and wine and oil, or choras b'kor chavitzenacha, and the b'chorim of your cattle and your sheep, b'chol nedarecha asher tider, and all your nedarim that you vow, v'nidreisecha, and all your nedavas, or trumas yadecha, and the truma of your hand. All these things you're not allowed to eat, b'sharecha, meaning outside, in your city, outside your shalai. So Rav Shimon is going to darshan this pasuk phrase by phrase, starting from the end and working our way back to the beginning. We'll see later on in the Gemara, we'll get to it tomorrow, why Rav Shimon does it in that order, why he takes the pasuk back
rather than
from the beginning to the end. Yeah. Like this. Well, Trumas Yodecha Eile Bikurim. When the pasuk says Trumas Yodecha, the last thing, that refers to Bikurim. It's called Trumas Yodecha because you have it in your hands, you bring it in your hands so that it's mitzvah, and the Kohen takes the basket from you and then you read the psuk.
You hold the basket.
You hold them. You bring the basket. You hold the basket, bring it to the Beth Mikdash. In fact, the Gemara, the Mishnah mentions over there in Bikurim that even Agrippa Samelach wasn't allowed to delegate it to somebody else. He himself had to take the basket on his shoulder and bring it into the Beth Mikdash. Yeah. The Trumas Yadecha refers to Bikurim. Amrav Shimon Ma Bozel Lamdenu. So Rav Shimon says, why does the pasuk need to mention that and to say that you're not allowed to eat it outside of your shalayim? If you're going to say the Torah is telling us you're not allowed to eat it outside the walls of Yerushalayim, I don't need the pasuk to tell us that. We should be able to make a kavachomer based on Meiser Sheni, which is less stringent. Ma Meiser Akal, Ma Dach Meiser Sheni, which is less stringent, which is more lenient. If you eat Meiser Sheni outside the wall of Yerushalayim, it's more lenient because Meiser Sheni can be eaten by anybody.
By anybody,
as opposed to if you told him, it can only be eaten by the Kohen. And yet, ochon chutz l'choim aloike, and if you eat it outside the wall of your shalayim, you get malchus, bikurim like koshing, and how much more so that should apply to bikurim. Holed ba'akot of ela lo'ochom, and bikurim abshle kora alei and shu loike. Therefore, Rav Shimon says, the pasuk must be coming to teach us, not that you're not allowed to eat them outside your shalayim, but that you're not allowed to eat the bikurim even in your shalayim before the psukim have been said.
That's where he gets it from.
That's it. Okay. Then he continues. The Chacham disagree with that. Now let's look at the next to last thing in the pasuk. We said in the pasuk you have v'nidvei secha, your donations that you're not allowed to eat them b'sharecha in your cities. Zutoida u'shlamim. This refers to toida and shlamim, which those are korbanos that a person is able to declare as a nedava. He's able to voluntarily say, I'll bring a toida or I'll bring a shlam. And again, Again, Rav Shimon says, why do we need to be told you're not allowed to eat them outside the walls of Yerushalayim? If you're going to say that it's to tell you you can't eat them outside the walls of Yerushalayim, so again, we can make a kavachomer from Meister, because Meister is again less stringent than Toda and Toda and Shlomim for reasons that the Gemara is going to discuss later. So therefore, you see, you'd know Toda and Shlomim automatically based on Meister. Hole bar kosev ela la'ochel b'Toda over Shlomim l'fnei zirka shuloika. So the pasuk must be coming to teach us a different din, that if you eat from a Kohen Toda or a Kohen Shlomim before the blood was sprinkled on the mizbeach, you will get malchus. Then you will get malchus. And one more, v'chorus zabachor. The next thing before that in the pasuk is v'chorus. That means a b'chor, exactly what it sounds like. And again, Amar Rav Shimon, ma bazel lamdeinu. What does the word b'chor come to teach? B'chorus come to teach us. Im lo ochon chut v'chayim a kavachayim u meiser. Are you going to say it means you can't eat them outside the wall of Yerushalayim? We know that by kavachayim u meiser. Again, we will see later on in the Gemara tomorrow, we'll get to what is the chumra of b'chor over meiser. That we should... Well, okay. Hold it, bar kosuv. No, the pasuk is teaching us a different game. If you eat from a bechor and you are a zor, even after the zrika, even after the blood was sprinkled, you will get malchus. That is what the word bechor is in the pasuk is coming to teach us. Not just that you can't eat it outside your shalayim, and not just that you can't eat it before zrika, because we could have learned that from Torah and Shlomim, but that also that if you are a zor, you can't eat from bechor. Period. Even after zrika is done.
And
then we get Malchus. Okay, and we'll continue tomorrow with the rest of the Braisa and the analysis of it.